and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. This is where we fill our expat lives up to the brim until they're overflowing with big fat expat love. Today we're talking about moving countries with children and specifically teenagers. And while you may have found it relatively easy to move from Trinidad to Timbuktu with a toddler, try it again when that toddler is a teen and things may prove to be a little more melodramatic. Today we're going to speak to some experienced expats about their stories and lessons learned. And we also have a fantastic interview that will provide you with the tools to tackle the travelling teen. This week I'm in Adelaide, Australia. You may hear the flies buzzing around me in this hot Aussie summer. And Nikki is in Hamburg, Germany, where she's in a state of bewilderment over the six-month delivery time of her new German car and her husband's choice of car seat colour. We're talking 50 shades of beige in Hamburg. Shall we go and say hello? Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Hello, Kirsty Rice. Alles gut, und du?
Those German lessons are really working, aren't they?
They're so kicking in.
So I want to hear about the car. I obviously want to hear about your week, but was the highlight the car?
Well, the highlight was either the car or the school bus breaking down on the day that the car was delivered. In which case, I could use it immediately. Yes, the car. It was not gold-plated. It took 6 months to arrive and it was not gold-plated.
Is that normal? Like, I mean, you arrived in Germany. Didn't you actually order this car before you got to Germany or did it happen after?
We ordered it the first week we were here or the second week we were here. And I should have been more active in the ordering process. All I said was, look, I just need lots of sensors. I've got a bit of a reputation. I would need sensors so I can actually manage my reverse parking skills and the tight spots around here. So I was focused on cameras and sensors. I was not focused on upholstery, which was a big mistake, as it turns out.
So what's he gone and done? What has your husband done?
Well, what he's done is he thought he was so clever he could do it all himself. So he started on the website doing it all himself. And the website's in German. And this is our second week in. And he was still in that phase, well, I don't really need help. I'm just going to show everyone that I'm a busy, important executive and can do it myself. And so he got someone to help him, I think, do the final, you know, making sure that we had all the right things, but no one went back and checked the upholstery. So we have a cream slash beige slash grey patterned interior. It's quite the sight. Anyway.
Oh, dear. And explain to me why it takes 6 months for a car to come. I mean, you actually purchased a German car in Germany. So is this normal? Do Germans wait 6 months for their cars to be delivered? Like, is this something they do? Apparently,
when you order a car, so it's not like in the States, or I've found out since because I've done some investigation. In the States or in Australia, when they deliver cars and they say, okay, here's all the things you can have. Do you know what I mean? So they come a little bit more tricked up as a base model, whereas here the base model is the base model and then each thing you order and then they build the car specifically for you. A lot of people said it's not uncommon at all to wait this long.
Well, I am back in the car this week because my 16-year-old is back in town, and while she's mastered the act of catching the bus and the train, I somehow still managed to be driving her maybe to the train station, I'm not sure, but I seem to be in the car with her all the time. It's amazing how that happens, isn't it?
That's so fabulous.
I know. It is so, there are absolutely no complaints here. So this week we are going to be talking about something we kind of touched on last week. I was talking about a friend of mine who was considering a move from Perth to Anchorage, and she was a little bit nervous about it all because she had moved in years gone by but with very young children, and now she was at the teenage stage of life and she was feeling a lot more nervous about it, which I totally get. So I had put the question out there on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases Facebook page, and I'd asked for tips and suggestions from those with teens about moving and what they thought you should do.
It was good. I mean, I thought there were some really great tips, and I thought there were a lot of people that just said, okay, I've got a question, I'm about to do this, or can someone help me? So I think it's probably fairly topical.
Yeah.
And someone has recently moved with a teen and a tween myself, there's still some more things I could probably implement here as well.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that when you have a toddler, you really can't fathom what it's like to have a teen. And, you know, I sat only this morning with a woman who was in her 60s but is still scarred by her daughter's teenage years. And her daughter is now, you know, has done remarkably well, and she's a mother herself. But, you know, she can still tell you story after story of just what a nightmare of a teen her daughter was. You know, things like thinking she'd do it, you know, give her daughter a treat and go and pick her up from school instead of her daughter having to catch the bus, and her daughter just completely ignoring her and walking past her and getting on the bus and catching the bus home.
But, yeah, I mean, like my daughter.
Yes, but the thing is, teens are hard. They're hard work, and they have, you know, as beautiful as they are, I mean, I wouldn't trade my teens for anything, and I absolutely adore them, but there's a whole different box of issues that come. And so it's hard enough without throwing in the, oh, and by the way, my teenage lovely, while you're highly emotional and needing to spend time in your room alone and being grumpy and whatever, we're going to move you from one side of the world to the other and take you away from your friends and, you know, just, you know, try and mess with you. I was nearly said something rude then. Anyway, so we kicked off and we had the beautiful Louise Smart, who is lovely, and by pure coincidence I met Louise Smart when she was bouncing her 12-week-old baby on her lap in Jakarta. Aww. He's now he must be nearly 17, I think. So that gives you an idea of time. But Louise has said that they found that honesty and including their kids in the reasons for the move rather than presenting it as a done deal, and she put in brackets even though you knew that it was, she said that they agreed with their eldest that he had to give them 6 months, and if he didn't like it after that, well, then they would consider boarding school in the town that they were leaving, and that seemed to work, and that most of all, including him in the discussions and treating him like an adult seemed to be the best way forward. She said it's the hardest thing in the world to move with teenagers, as it's hard enough to parent them without throwing in a huge change.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan, to have the involvement and the boarding school option. I'm all for boarding school, as we know.
But, yeah, definitely to involve them and make them feel like they are part of the decision.
Yeah, and Lane Blakely was good. And I kind of related to this because I feel like this is what my daughter might act like. But she says her daughter was nearly 13 when they moved to Japan, and they were ecstatic, but she was convinced that her parents were trying to ruin her life.
Parents are trying to ruin their children's lives, yes.
And they allowed her to be angry, which was interesting. So for about 2 months, she stormed out of the room whenever they started talking about Japan, when you were in my life, rolling her eyes, when we mentioned sushi, and told us repeatedly that she wasn't getting on the plane. And then she added, spoiler alert, she got on the plane. She said that she was allowed to have outbursts with sort of no repercussions, but there was a catch. They gave her an end date, and it was circled on the calendar, and they said, up to this date, you could have all the drama. Then after that, you have to stop it. So she said she's not talking about real actual concerns. So when there were real concerns after the calendar end date, she was allowed to talk about it, but no more drama after that date. So I think that's actually a really good idea.
I do too. I thought it was brilliant. I really love that comment because, yeah, okay, permission to get angry, but we will put up with you being angry, but there is a certain point where we're going to call it quits and say we're a team, we're a family, you know, we all have to get on with this together. I thought it was brilliant. You know, they didn't punish her for being angry.
Yeah.
But they just sort of, you know, acknowledged that it was going to happen. I thought she was really, really clever. So Shari Ross said, love them. Ask them that they love you and believe in you. Believe in yourself. In years to come, you might find that that's what it boils down to. Shari has three gorgeous big kids who have been expats their entire lives, and they have moved, I'm going to take a stab at roughly 15 times, because I think we've lived in four of those locations with Shari and her kids, and they've kept moving while we've stayed put. Beautiful kids. And I think that's exactly it. That is what it boils down to, it is that, you know, you just absolutely shower them with love so that they have that confidence. You know, the woman I was talking about who was talking about her teenage nightmare this morning, I realised as she was talking about it, because she was going through the whole this, then this happened and then this happened, but all the way through it, there were little sprinklings of, and then her and I did this together, and then her and I. So as disastrous and awful as it can seem at the time, as long as they know that you're there as the safety net to come back to, that you love them unconditionally, they will come back and it will be okay.
Oh, that's good. And it's nice to hear a success story.
Yeah, that's right. What about Heike?
So Heike said, Heike's a brave woman. No matter how old they are, let them join you on the exploratory look-see trip, if you are lucky to have one and you don't do the virtual online thing, and make it as fun as possible. Go to their new school, let them help with house hunting, let them be part of the process, and let them see that you also have emotions. You know, you might be sad, you have worries and concerns that you talk to people about when you go on your look-see. So just keep it real and honest and make a list of cool things to look forward to, which you've talked about before. And then once you get there, to do a calendar of events with dates and visitors and trips, etc. So add a bit of bribery, which...
Oh, yeah. Actually, I love that calendar of events, because you find with your kids, I find quite often we may have made these great plans and we think the kids know because we've talked about it with them, but we don't actually realise, no, they haven't really acknowledged that's what's going on. Do you know, like quite often with my kids, it'll be, oh, yeah, but we're going on Saturday to blah, blah, blah. What? We're going this Saturday? Oh, I didn't realise we were flying to Australia this Saturday.
We have to do lots of forward planning with the kids. So, yeah, we do forget about it from time to time, and it's usually disastrous. But I don't want to go this Saturday. You know, I've got other things on. I'd rather stay at home. Yeah.
Okay, so we had Nicola Campbell, who said, we're leaving Qatar tonight and relocating to Perth with our 13-year-old daughter. Thankfully, she's really sporty, and we've already contacted both rugby and football clubs in Perth, and she'll start some activities next week before starting school the following week. I think that's fantastic. She said it helps to try and get them involved in the things they love as soon as possible to help them settle. And I agree. I think sometimes we can feel cruel that we have let a child, you know, move one day and had to front up at, you know, ballet class the next. But I think with kids, they have to kind of jump in and make some friends as quickly as they can, or else there's that fear of just sort of, you know, lolling about and getting a little bit worked up about it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So I had friends that came here and they have teenage girls that play soccer, and before school even started, or they didn't rely on school soccer or sport, they found a soccer club for them to join, so that they were thrown right into it. And also sometimes with their language, that's also helpful, so they just go and have to immerse themselves in the whole foreign language.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's frightening, isn't it?
And so Marika said, put the kids first. If a move isn't good for them, try to avoid it. Let them go to one high school. She was an expat kid herself who went to three high schools, which didn't turn out so well, with an exclamation mark. As an expat parent, they stayed home for their high school years, and the eldest still struggled with the adjustment. The younger at 11 had an easier transition. Both turned out fine and benefited from their expat upbringing, and the eldest is now a third-generation expat living in Japan. So that's an interesting take as well.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a very personal take, isn't it? Like Marika's saying that she moved, you know, three times during high school and that it was a disaster, and so she wouldn't do it to her kids, which, you know, it Fair enough. I think we're all guilty of that, aren't we, in that we want our children's lives to be better than ours, or we want to learn from the mistakes in ours. Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I think I'm probably on the Marika's bench in that I wouldn't want to move three times during high school. But then if you have these incredible expat children that have, you know, live that life and have the tools, and you don't know too. I mean, each location, if it's a better location each time, you know, maybe that's it. But, yeah, she did say that both of her children turned out fine and benefited from their expat upbringing. I think she was just saying she had a very clear end date. But Cara agreed with her. She said if you can keep them at one high school, that's ideal. That she was moved to the other end of the country at 15 and had to complete her final 2 years at a new school and absolutely hated it. When she says looking back on it, giving the choice, she doesn't think her parents would do that again. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we sent our daughter off to school as well, was we wanted to know that absolutely, definitely she would be in that one spot for those final few years of school. Whereas in the expat world, even if you think you're going to stay, quite often the company has other ideas, which we're both learning about. So, you know, for us, it was very much, we just want to make sure that we're not going to get her to year 11 and then, you know, have G lose his job and her in a state of flux. We had so many questions and comments, and I think I definitely want to go back to the people that left all those questions and comments and suggest that they listen today, because we've done a couple of really, really interesting interviews, which I think are really going to help people. One last thing I wanted to talk about, though, was Justine. And Justine's in a different boat in that she said her 16-year-old can't wait to move, but they're struggling with finding schools. And I think they've stayed put for quite some time in WA. But she said now it looks like their 16-year-old's going to have to stay behind in WA. They're thinking of moving to Doha. Just because they can't find a school for her. And she said the 12-year-old hates the idea of moving, but to make it worse, can't get into any of the schools because she has mild learning delays. And Justine raised the point that why is it the international schools can pick and choose who they have in their schools, and that she hasn't sort of seen that elsewhere, that, you know, in Australia you just enrol your child and they work out what help you need and then they go and get it. I don't know, Nikki, what do you think about international schools and their ability of knocking back those with special needs?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess it depends where your experience comes from and where you've come from. So all the international schools, I mean, I have a child who is classified as special needs in a schooling environment. But if you're in America, he's called twice exceptional. So take your pick. So it's when you test it on the gifted scale, but you also have issues that require support in the classroom. You're exceptional in both those ways, just so everybody understands that. When we moved here, there was only one international school that was an option, as in there's only one international school in Hamburg. And I said, you know, my child has these issues. You know, he's on the autism spectrum, old school Asperger's, and he has ADD, and you know, this is what's been done in past schools to support him. And they said, oh, we have to take everyone because we're the only school. She wasn't very happy about it, but I was like, yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because that's not always the case at all.
Yeah, I accept and acknowledge that, but we have wherever we've been made particular, you know, workarounds. So in South Africa, he went to a small private school and they didn't necessarily have the support, but we were able to hire someone who could help him in the classroom for half the day and you know, we paid, but they were part of their staff. So, you know, There are workarounds in particular situations.
There are workarounds, but I wonder, is it just harder to negotiate when that school is chock-a-block full and they don't need to worry about clientele? Do you know, the situation in Doha is that there are a massive amount of expats and there is a waiting list, you know, a mile long. And when that happens, obviously the school gets to be very picky and they take the easiest route, and that's wrong, and I think it's very, very wrong, but it's what you often see in a busy expat location.
We lived in Hong Kong, which is a busy expat location. He went to school there, and the school, you know, it was before he had any diagnosis, so the school, we weren't lying when we said, you know, any issues, no issues. Not that we know of. So the school was able to help us and work with us and cope there. But I hear what you're saying, and it's definitely something we consider and we think about every time we move, because, you know, moving is hard, adjustment is hard, and that's just for everyone. And then you have the other things on top of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we have done an episode on expats with special needs children. If anyone is in that boat and they're interested to hear some stories of other expats. Now,
I was going to say, I think there's also an opportunity for another expat. I mean, another podcast with a topic of, you know, when you move and you can't get into schools and what happens.
Yes, definitely. We'll definitely cover that, because we have a huge amount of expats that are currently homeschooling. I'd love to talk to more people about what they did, like how they fixed it and what some of the answers were. So, yeah, that we'll definitely do that as a topic in the next sort of 10 weeks or so. Okay, so we spoke to Amanda, who has been in Sri Lanka for the past 3 years. She's an Aussie, but she's heading home, and so the pain is very fresh and raw. Her children, both when she moved to Sri Lanka, weren't entirely happy about the decision, and now that she's moving home, they're not entirely happy about the decision. I spoke to, this always reminds me of my friend Erica, who locked herself in her bedroom for, you know, weeks, and then did it at the same end of the posting. Now, when I spoke to Amanda, she was so accommodating. She's actually on holidays in Penang, and she was at a big zipline park when we spoke on Skype on her phone. So she talked about moving back. She kicked off and had me in hysterics, and this isn't in the interview, but when I got hold of her, she said that her children call her the woman with four daughters, 16 suitcases and a bald man. But
excellent.
She, no, it was very cute, but she was so honest and just made some really great points about the normality of teens, and that, yes, they get angry, and, yes, they're going to go AWOL. And she made some really great points about social media that I just thought were bang on. So let's have a listen to Amanda now.
So we've just finished our posting in Sri Lanka, so we've been there just under 3 years with the Department of Foreign Affairs. So we're just transitioning back to Canberra. We took four girls over. One had to leave to go to uni, and so she was only with us for half the posting. So I've got a 20-year-old now, a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, and an 11-year-old. Because my husband's ex-military, so all our, we've done domestic postings. This is our first overseas as a family. The oldest one, bit of grief when we came over. She disappeared the night before we were leaving. She went AWOL on us for a few hours while she said the emotional farewells to her boyfriend. And then once we sort of got her over there, she was a bit hard work for the first few months. And then we actually let her fly home on her own in the June school holidays. And she sort of says now, you know, she just remembered thinking, right, well, this is, you know, broke up with the boyfriend and came back to us in Colombo and said, right, I'm here now. You know, I've got two choices. I can make it terrible or I can just embrace it. So she decided to embrace it. Thank God. I think the biggest thing we had to do quickly was form a circle of like-minded friends. The first daughter that had a birthday there cried on her birthday, and we're like, we went to the fancy restaurant and we laid it all out, and she was so upset. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she said, it just doesn't feel like my birthday because there's no family or friends. Like, normally we'd do cake or do something. And so we went, right, next time round, we need to, you know, make some friends and just include them and bring them, have pizza and dinner at home like we would normally do, like those sort of traditions that we didn't think about. And sort of by the time we left, it was whenever it was, because other families are just the same. They might have had cousins or aunties or uncles that they always shared birthdays with. So when we were like, want to come over and have pizza at our place because it's so-and-so's birthday? And they were like, yeah, you know, the kids, that's what they miss. So I think making that, and like when I was struggling, because Sri Lanka's not an easy place to live in, you really need to be aware that they pick up on it and sort of try and mask or make jokes of situations. The 11-year-old, is, you know, little kids are easy. They get sad for a day, but mum and dad are still there, so that's the extent of their world. But the social media stuff, they have a lot of access. They're on Snapchat and Instagram, and they're still connected to all their friends back home through that social media. But already we're finding, and this is the few tears we've had since we left Colombo, is that the kids are not part of what happens day to day in the school environment, but they're still trying to stay connected to their friends through Snapchat and Instagram. And the tears we had the other day were about, I'm not part of the group anymore. I don't understand what's happened at school that they're laughing about, and I wasn't there. And that there's been some tears about that. So you just got to work through it. I don't know that there's any right recipe to manage it, but try in. That was days of anger and silent treatment and really bad attitude before I had to, so my husband and I spoke about it, and he's like, you know, we've just got to tell her she's got to snap out of it. And I said, I don't think we can say snap out of it. That's just not going to help the situation at all. So I had to sit down with her and say, okay, look. And the oldest girl helped a bit as well, because she was like, Mum, what's going on with Briar? And I'm going, look, this is just part of the process. It's part of what we've got to deal with. And she goes, oh, you know, why is she so angry? And I'm like, I don't think she's angry. I think anger is the easiest emotion for her to express. I said, I think she's anxious and she's sad and she's, you know, a whole lot of other things, but anger is the easiest one for a teenager to push across at you. So in the end, I had to talk to her the other night in the hotel, and we went back up to the room and I said, you know, we've got to talk about this. I go, you're really angry. You're being rude to Mum and Dad. You're being rude to everybody else. And you're not like this. This is not who you are. You need to tell me. I said, I don't think you're angry. She goes, I don't know why I'm angry. I said, I think you're sad, Dale. I think you're anxious. What do you think? And then it all came out, and it was like, I don't understand why we had to have a holiday. Why couldn't we just go home? Why couldn't we just leave Sri Lanka and go straight to Australia? She said, I feel like I'm in limbo land. I'm not part of the old school. She said, I'm not part of the new school. We're not in our house. We're just nothing. We're just in the middle of two places. I just wish we went straight home. Okay. How do you deal, you know, and I just sort of had a breath and I said, okay, well, it is what it is. Dad's, you know, he's worked very hard the last 3 years, and this holiday was Dad wanting to have a little bit of a break before we go back, and Mum starts work again as soon as we get home, you know, and sort of explained to her why we chose to have this because we're 8 days transiting back to Australia, and what it was all about. And I said, you've got two choices here now. I said, you can stay like this and make it tough for everybody for the next week, or you can just enjoy it and embrace the time and, you know, look back on it and go, oh wow, we went to Penang last year and it was great. Not we went to Penang and I was miserable the whole time. I said, because, you know, it's not fair on anybody. So she's been good. She's had, you know, the last 2 days, she's sort of turned her attitude around a little bit. I think with social groups and that with, and especially with the kids, I think just let it slowly transition out. Like Briar's disappointed that she's not in on the jokes and stuff that had happened at school, but I think they need to decide for themselves when they're ready to, and I don't know that that'll happen until they've started to reconnect or make new connections, you know. And one of the big things I've always pushed with my kids is you don't have to have a best friend. You don't have to find someone and connect yourself up to them. You can have more than one best friend. You might get friends with someone and after a few weeks they go, oh, they're not really my kind of people. So you just got to transition through that process.
Okay, so I thought Amanda just did so well at showing that there's no quick fix. What did you think?
Yes, what great down-to-earth commentary and just really, you know, I just felt like this is what she's talking about. So when she was talking about home there, she was referring to Sri Lanka, right? When she
yes.
was talking about her kids and home. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which is what we do, and that's what makes it all so confusing, right?
Yeah. The fact that she's got four daughters and she obviously had to deal with them all differently is so, so interesting. But I liked how they were able to give the freedom to the oldest one to go back and make her own decision about the breakup and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was that must have been a hard decision to make.
Yes. Brilliant. Yes.
And also an approach that I have with my children about you don't have to have a best friend and it's okay to change friend decisions. Like you don't have to jump in and then go, oh, I've made a mistake, but I'm trapped. You know, you can just back out slowly.
Yeah, like you said, it's a good rule for adults as well, isn't it? But yeah, I agree. I thought it was just such a down-to-earth commentary, and she was very real in having to sit down with your parents and sit down with your teens, and like she was saying that her husband kind of had this attitude of, you know, she's just got to get over it, you know? And she was saying, I don't think that's going to work.
I think that's true, you know, and I thought it's wise, you know, she was just very wise. Like, you know, I don't think you're angry. Like, it's so hard when you're caught up in that situation to say, I don't think you're angry. Like, I think my daughter's angry all the time.
Okay, so now I want to play our second interview. And I think our second interview actually shows how clever Amanda was, because in our second interview we spoke to Sarah White. And Sarah has a doctorate in emotional intelligence and the third culture kid. And she has designed some cards that you can use when you're moving or in transition with your third culture child. But like I said, I think when you hear this interview with Sarah, you'll realise Amanda was so much already doing the right thing. So I started off by asking Sarah about how and why she came to the study that she did, and to tell me a little bit more about the cards. Let's have a listen to Sarah.
I was a primary school teacher in an international school, in the British school here, and then did my doctorate in emotional intelligence and third culture kids, which is quite unusual. There's not a lot of people who've done that. And actually was thinking, wow, we're not really doing enough to support the children that we're teaching. We do all sorts of great pastoral care for things like, you know, being aware of drugs or making good friendship choices and all of these kind of things. But when it comes to this really huge transition that's going on, nothing's really happening. You're kind of expecting that children are resilient and they'll be fine, and some of them are and some of them are really not. So I actually left about 18 months ago now. I'd done my doctorate. I felt it was time for a new challenge and moved into consulting and training. So initially I was very much focused on the emotional intelligence side of things, and actually as time's gone by I've realised what a need there is for some positive and practical support in terms of moving as an expat. You know, it's a traumatic thing to do, to move. It's really difficult. So, but yeah, that's really where that came from. And so looking at this, it was really looking at how can I reach more people without necessarily being there myself, because there's only one of me. And so these cards seemed a really good solution. So what I've developed is a set of coaching cards which cross-reference the stages of transition, which a lot of people are familiar with, you know, that leaving stage, and then the transition stage where it's complete chaos and no one knows what's happening and there's no routines, it's an absolute nightmare. And I've actually cross-referenced that with things that I've picked up as being really important factors in every single stage. So, for example, one of the elements of transition that I've created is perception, and that's talking about your feelings the whole way through. because moving is a massively emotional experience. And so just by checking in and, you know, talking about feelings doesn't make things worse. It doesn't make them stronger. We actually know from the neuroscience it actually makes people feel an awful lot better. So that's the idea behind these cards, is that each stage and element will cross-reference, and there's at least one question, sometimes two or three, based on that. So the idea is that as soon as you know you're leaving, you take the block of leaving cards, and you've got questions that, you know, you can answer them in different ways, be creative with that. But it's really just an idea to actually talk through what's happening, helping families to communicate really about what's going on, not just from children to parents, but also from parents to children. But from speaking to parents, it's that whole thing of, oh, well, we have to be brave and we have to be strong and we have to not show the children how I feel. And the children are thinking, well, I can't show them that I'm upset because they seem fine. So it's really just a way of bridging that gap, of reducing that emotional friction that's involved in a move. So that's the idea behind them. So I'm really excited. We've literally just had them printed this week. They're at the printers now, and the box is being printed, and it's all very official. So it's all going ahead, which is brilliant.
So, Sarah, what about when we're moving with a 15-year-old and a 3-year-old? They're two very different conversations. How do you handle it then?
Yeah, that's difficult. Talking to children talking to parents of young children, one of the things that comes through is thinking about how they're showing how they feel. They're much less likely to be able to articulate their feelings. And so if they're, you know, losing the plot and throwing things everywhere and having tantrums, then probably as a parent, you know, something's not right. So in that instance, the transition cards are probably more useful for parents in terms of guiding them to know that, well, routines have gone out of the window. That's something we normally would do. Maybe we need to think about how we can actually put a routine into place to bridge that gap. When it comes to teenagers, and I know the usual thing is, I don't want to talk to my mum and dad, that's not cool. So it's really thinking about using those questions, but it doesn't have to be a sit-down, formal, put everything away, we're going to talk about this for an hour until everyone's all right with it. It's really a case of, you know, maybe you have that conversation in the car. I listened to your last podcast when you mentioned about having conversations when you don't have eye contact. And it's amazing how many parents say, actually, they always come up with awkward questions in the car, or, you know, things come up when they're just about to go to bed. So I think it's just having those cards to make you aware of the things that can happen, and also to equip you with questions that you can ask when the moment is right and when the child is ready to talk about those things as well. The idea behind the cards is that they can be used with children probably thinking from about 6 or 7 up to 18. And actually, when I've shown these to friends of mine who've been third culture kids themselves, they're like, oh my goodness, I actually could use this right now because I'm moving as well. So the idea is it's not kind of the questions that are age specific, but rather how you ask the question. So if you're maybe have a younger child and you're asking them the question, maybe they want to draw you a picture to answer it. If it's a question about, you know, there's one question about what things are really precious to you that you want to take on the move, maybe that's a case of you go to the bedroom with them and you go and you make a note, you put post-it notes on the things that are precious and the things they want to take. So it's going through that process in an active way rather than just sitting and having a conversation. But in terms of the questions, one of the questions which cross-references that leaving phase, so this is when you know you're going, there's all these feelings have come up of thinking, you know, this uncertainty and having to leave friends and not really being sure what's going to happen, cross-reference with that element of perception. And the question is, share your feelings about leaving, naming each emotion in detail. Because what we know is that if you can name your emotion, particularly if it's a strong emotion or an uncomfortable emotion, that it actually decreases the reactivity in the brain that's producing all of those chemicals and all of that feeling. So it's a really powerful tool to actually address those feelings. And once you've got, you know, particularly teenagers with hormones and the emotions are running high and the hormones are all over the place as well, if you just get them to identify how they're feeling, it's amazing how quickly that feeling will calm and subside, and then you can move into a rational conversation about, you know, why you feel that way and where that's coming from.
And for those of us with teens, how do we give them the tools? Like, what can we do for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of it is to do, I feel, with how it's modelled. So one of the things that comes through for third culture kids is that unresolved grief is a real issue, because if you leave, then you're losing friends and you're losing a little bit of yourself and you're losing a bit of your identity, and that's almost a bereavement process. So actually thinking about acknowledge, you know, naming that feeling is really important. And just thinking about why you feel that way and exploring that. And for that to be okay, I think a lot of the time when I speak to parents at workshops that I'm running, it's very, very interesting. They'll say, oh, I just want them to feel better and I want to fix it. And it's one of those things that's really hard because you can't really fix it. They're sad because they've left. They're sad because they're missing friends. And it's really normal to feel that way. And they probably will feel that way for a little while yet. And I think it's that whole thing of really just being comfortable sitting with that feeling, and for them to know they've got permission to feel upset and have permission to grieve is really important. And providing that comfort for them and saying, you know, we miss friends and it's really difficult, isn't it, when you miss friends and when you've gone, and you know, can you get in touch with them? There's one of the questions on here that is, you know, who do you want to keep in touch with? Who's important to you? And also thinking about the realistic aspect of keeping in contact, because social media is great, but it sometimes can take over your life. And if you're a family that moves regularly, it's not realistic for your child to be speaking to friends from, you know, previous moves every single night. They've got homework, they've got to sleep. So it's really thinking about how you can do that in a practical way that will actually help them. It's one of those things that talking about feeling bad doesn't make you feel worse. And being given permission to feel bad, it makes you feel better.
Oh, I think that's something even us as adults need to remember, that we need to have that permission to grieve. Okay, so we've given them the permission to grieve. How do we then help them move forward?
I think it's about timing as well, because if they're still in that kind of shock and grief phase of the move, they're not really going to welcome your ideas about, well, what could you do to make friends? And really it's letting them take the lead on that a little bit. And this is for most children. It won't work for every child. Some children may need a bit more guidance with this, depending on their age. But certainly for teenagers, thinking about, well, you know, what actions can you take to change any uncomfortable feelings you're having? You know, actually giving them the power to realise that this is, you know, that optimistic thing of this is temporary, this feeling isn't going to last forever, and it's isolated to this move, even though it feels like a really big thing. But recognising that it's your effort that's really important in moving forward. So there's a place for recognising those feelings, but at the same time, you can think about, right, well, in terms of meeting new friends and fitting into this place where we are now, what can you do? And sometimes it's difficult when you're talking to a child. I know I used to teach sort of 7-year-olds, and we'd talk about friendship challenges, and I'd say, well, what do you think they could do? And they'd give me an answer that was so far out of left field. I'd be like, really? And they're like, yeah. And they go and do it, and that's great. And it's giving children that agency, that choice over the decisions they're making, the actions they're taking. And there's real power in them actually connecting the dots themselves. And even if that doesn't work, that again is a great learning experience for what about it went wrong, how come it didn't work, what would you do differently next time, what can you try instead. And it's all about building that resilience, building that optimism, and recognising that moving really does suck a lot of the time. A lot of it is really sucky, but what can you do to even feel 5% better? You know, you're not talking about one huge action that's going to make everything all right, because it doesn't work like that. But, you know, it's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, if you're at 1 out of 10, how can you get to 2? Or how could you get to 5? and just thinking about supporting them and moving along just a little bit.
Okay, so here's the million-dollar question. Does this, all of this, I mean, it sounds so difficult, does this make the expat child stronger, or are we just doing terrible things to our children?
Well, it's interesting, if you read any of the literature about third culture kids, it's quite traumatic. I remember reading for my thesis and thinking, oh my God, I'm taking part in this conspiracy against children and it's ruining them. But there are huge amounts of positives that come with an expat lifestyle as well. You know, if you look at how comfortable children are in different cultures, how comfortable they are with a wide range of people, you know, how quickly they can adapt in different situations, there are two sides to the same coin. What I would say about the transition and the grief aspect of it is it really depends on how it's handled. One of the big challenges that third culture kids face as they grow up into adulthood is unresolved grief, where the grief hasn't been processed and it hasn't been dealt with. Perhaps they haven't been given permission to grieve and permission to feel bad, and so they've kind of stuffed it down inside and not really dealt with it. And so in talking about the transition and talking about feeling bad and talking about grief, which we're not really comfortable doing as people, to be honest, but just being a little bit uncomfortable and talking about it, it actually teaches children to get through that process themselves. You know, it's modelling a great process for them to walk through for when they're in that situation and perhaps you're not there, maybe. You know, I know your daughter's at boarding school, and it's thinking about, well, when you're not actually present, or when you can't get to the phone immediately, or there's a time difference, or when they're adults, it gives them those tools that they've practiced with you and a safe space that they can actually move forwards and use independently.
Wow, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, I loved Sarah, and I want to get Sarah back again because I thought she had so much good advice. What did you find really interesting about Sarah?
Well, I found the cards very interesting because, as I've just said before, like, my son is on the spectrum, and with kids on the autism spectrum, often you use things called social stories that help them when they're struggling with social skills or particular situations or even learning things. And so it's very interesting because I was like, this is exactly what we've done with him in the past. When there's certain situations, we will work through it using a step-by-step process very similar to this. So I found that really interesting. I also liked the active management. So when you have the card, you know, you can do things, so you don't just sit and talk with your child. So with my daughter, this would be very helpful. Like, what are the things you want to take with you? Let's go to the room and let's label them. She'd be right into that. Like, you know, so different things work with different kids.
Yeah.
And the teens and social media, which Amanda kind of worked out for herself, but through a process. But I thought Sarah reiterated that, saying, you know, it's not practical to be speaking to friends from a previous move every single night when, you know, when you moved on, but the kids have to come to that in their own terms.
Yes, and you have to let it play out naturally. Look, I really, because I think I've talked before about how my daughter manages two very distinct groups of friends. She's got the groups of friends at boarding school that she's obviously after a year become very much almost in a sister relationship with, and then she's got her group of expat friends, and of course that's all changing and evolving, and I am continually torn by talking about news of what's happening in that other life and her being able to see what's happening. And, you know, they've all obviously just become seniors and they're talking about prom and, you know, they're in those sporting teams that she was in once, and that life doesn't exist for her now. And I think for a teen moving country and having to be constantly reminded, I mean, we didn't have to be reminded as kids. We didn't see it. We moved and it was gone. You know, you could get a letter being told, but you didn't see the Instagram pic or the Snapchat pic of everybody dancing around having a great time without you. I think it's horrendous to try and deal with that.
Well, I mean, and you know it as adults yourself. I mean, you feel the same thing. You move to a new place and you log on to Facebook or Instagram and you see all your friends doing all the stuff you were just doing 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you've got no friends, you're in a new place. Okay, there's things happening, but you still feel like you're missing out. And that's as an adult who's meant to have self-regulating emotions, which, you know, not as a teen with all the crazy hormones going on. I mean, I think it's very, very difficult.
Yep. And I thought when she talked about unresolved grief, and I just, see, that's a big one for me. And you and I have talked about this before, about how I had never really got over leaving Libya because I left for a holiday and never went back because I had, you know, very young children. And I definitely have unresolved grief about that, where I picture, even though I know logically those people aren't there anymore, that everything's changed, you know, there's been plenty about it on the news, but I still would love for anything to just plant myself back in that life to say goodbye. And I thought...
That's another episode.
Yeah, it is. And we've got that down as another episode, haven't we, when you just don't leave a place properly. But I also thought, as a parent, when you move with kids too, you kind of just want to fix it. Like, you want them to... you want to see them just jump into new friendships and jump into their new life and happily, you know, be in their new life. And you can't. You just have to let it play out as how it's meant to play out. And I think as parents, you know, that is one of the tough things that we have to deal with. You know, people always ask you, you know, how are they going or how's this? And you want to say, oh, it's all great, but it's not going to be all great. There's going to be that those natural bumps in the road.
I mean, you just want to fix everything a lot of the time.
Yes.
It's very hard to step away and say, this is a journey they have to go through themselves. You know?
Yeah. And that whole...
Like a yoga pose. Be very zen-like.
Yeah, but also that it's going to build resilience. Do you know that,
yes,
that going through that process is you are creating this child who's, as hard as it is to watch, going to learn from the experience and become better at it. But I loved the things about what actions you could take and knowing that those feelings weren't going to last forever. But Nikki, this is where I get a bit torn with the whole thing, is that I think with teenagers and the whole third culture kid, because I know that in our school in Qatar, there are a lot of coffee mornings and discussions and experts and whatever, and sometimes you can talk a lot about what moving does to your life. And there has been, this is why I want to get Sarah back again, because Sarah had said, you know, there's been so many negative things written about it, because obviously the people that had a negative experience are more likely to write about it than the people that hadn't. But I think we have to be careful with teens that we don't head down a road where we're giving them, and the excuse is not the right term, but, you know, it's very easy to cross on into the woe is me, my life is terrible because you made me move. And, you know, I have had with my eldest had a discussion a couple of years ago, you know, where we were in the car and she said something about, you know, expat kids and, you know, why it was so hard. And it had that tone of, you know, it's just we're a whole different species of people and that nobody understands us, you know. And I had to sort of sit her down and say, hey, hang on, there's army kids that move, you know, within their country, but they move every year. And, you know, kids whose parents were, you know, that was just what they did. They went from job to job to job because they were incredibly transient and they survived. And that at the same time of while you've had some shitty stuff happen, you've had some amazing experiences and have been very indulged. And I think you've got to find that balance. Hey, kid, you've always had two parents that love you, the ability to travel, food on the table, great schooling, and amazing friendships.
Yeah, well, it comes back to Lane really as well, in that there's a cutoff time. So we'll indulge you. We'll let you, like, have this drama, but, you know, moveon.com. is the end of the road. It's the outcome you wish to achieve. Sorry, people, I'm not being very harsh, but I'm just saying. You know, which is to your point, is that you've got to acknowledge it.
Yes.
But that you also have to acknowledge that you know, instead of children starving in Africa, I'm now using war-torn countries, which is very, very bad.
No, but I know what you mean, because there is that children starving in Africa argument, right, where you'll never get a child to finish their dinner if you're talking about children starving in Africa, because they don't care. Do you know, they can't assimilate it. But that's exactly what I mean. It's that balance, because I'm trying to say, you know, children in war-torn countries, children who aren't educated, children who would kill to be transplanted into your family, do you know, to have those opportunities.
Yeah.
And just to remember that yes, it is tough to move location, and it is tough to have to start all over again, but it's not the toughest thing in the world to get through as a 14-year-old.
Yeah, so I think lots to think about there, lots of great tips from our listeners and readers, and also from a professional with a doctorate in third culture kids.
Yes, thank you, Sarah White. And we need to tell people where they can find those cards of Sarah's. She has a website that we will put up on our podcast show notes, which is at twofatexpats.com. So Sarah is sarahwhite.com, and White is white.com, but you can find the cards there. So Nikki, podcasts. Tell me, what have you been listening to this week?
Well, I took your tip from last week and I went to the documentary podcast, the BBC ones, and really loving them. I think they're fantastic. Two that stood out for me this week were The President and the Press, which is topical, but also about the history of the press covering the US president and the White House and just how it's evolved over time. So Woodrow Wilson used to speak to them while he was having his morning shave, and apparently cheeky reporters would ask tricky questions when the person shaving him was at a very special spot.
I had no idea. That one sounds brilliant.
I know, and it's fireside chat. So FDR was the first president to speak to Americans over the radio, and they would gather around the radios, and some of them would put a photo of him on their radio so that they would feel like he was there talking to them. It's really interesting. It's a really good one. There's some other really good things. The Kennedy assassination, so about the reporting and how they took a reporter to put them on the plane because one of the pool reporters had to be there to witness the swearing-in of Lyndon Johnson, so that they could say it actually happened. And it's just, it's really, really interesting. I loved it. The other one, I don't know if you've listened to this, because this is about a previous country you've lived in, was about Indonesia. It's called Sex Mountain.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you listened to that one?
No. I'm going to, though.
It's a fascinating story, which incorporates quite a bizarre sex ritual into, like, a very Muslim country. So at a hilltop shrine in Java, there's a gravesite, and annually there's a ritual, and people go to the mountain to meet others, like total strangers that are not their spouse or partner, and they have sex. They pray, and then they have sex with this person. But it gets better, because it's meant to bring luck to their business in the coming year. Mm-hmm. But they have to repeat it every 35 days for 10
days. Oh, God, some bloke's come up with that. Some bloke has come up with that. That sounds like my husband's story after he had the vasectomy, where he said, oh, but I have to have sex, you know, 50 times in the next month.
That's what I thought. It's a fascinating little story. But it's very interesting because it is in a Muslim country and these kind of things. And it's also about the fact that it was like a tradition. And it was, I mean, the people that were interviewed, there were a wide range of people. And one of them said, you know, put anything in Indonesia and it has a twist. Like Catholics in Indonesia have a different kind of twist. You know, Muslims, Buddhists, all these different things have a bit of a twist because they become uniquely Indonesian. I mean, Indonesia is one of the largest Muslim countries in the world, or if the largest, is it? I'm not sure. Just very interesting. So I really enjoyed it, and you like, it sounds like a total scam. And scam things have built up around it. Like, you know, now there's a bit of a red light district just down the street. Surprise, surprise. But they did interviews with people, and I just, it's funny, but it's also there's some poignant parts to it. So I thought it was quite good.
Sorry, and so that was all on the documentary. So yes. You have to go one to look for a podcast called The Documentary, which is on. It's a BBC podcast.
Yeah, and I'll put the links to those particular episodes in the show notes as well. And then I'm back on my German. So I, by coincidence, someone last night put a question on an expat page that I'm a member of in Hamburg and said, you know, what's good to listen to so I can listen in my new car. And I'm now started listening to an appropriately titled podcast called Slow German, where they speak slowly so you can understand. So I'm going to give that a go. What about you, Kat?
So podcasts for me, I have literally started today, and it's a fantastic new podcast called Homecoming, which is a Gimlet podcast, and it, I think, was released in October 2016. I've only just started it today. So, it's more of a, I don't even know how you would describe it, like a serial.
It's narrative fiction.
Yes. So it's like old style radio of checking in and listening. David Schwimmer, Kathleen Guinea, is that her name? Guinea? I think it is.
I don't know.
I'm bad because I don't have it written here in front of me, but I love her because she was a character on, can you remember a movie years ago called Friends with Money that Jennifer Aniston was in?
Oh, no.
Oh, look, this movie just, you know how sometimes you can have a movie that really strikes a chord with you, but you don't ever hear anyone else talk about it, and people give you blank looks when you mention it. So Jennifer Aniston was in this movie called Friends with Money, and it was not your everyday Jennifer movie in that she was a housekeeper in it. But all of her friends, who were all in their 40s, were getting on with their lives, and they were, you know, they had money and houses and businesses and things, and she just wasn't. She was a cleaning lady. I know in America they call them maids, but so she was a cleaning lady and struggling, but it was looking at all the different relationships, and the woman who's in this podcast, Homecoming, who plays one of the lead roles, she played in Friends with Money, she was in this relationship with a guy, they were both screenwriters, and they used to sit across from each other and act out, you know, their words as they wrote them. And it was just, I just thought it was a brilliant look at 40-something relationships. And I just remember one of these poignant moments where she stubs her toe as she walks from one place to the other, like really hurts herself, and he kind of doesn't even really look up. He keeps writing, and it's that point you realise in a relationship where it's gone bad, where that person's not saying, are you okay? Do you know, like they're... Yeah. And nothing's said about it. It's just this moment in the movie where you see it. You realise she looks back and he's just still working, and you go, he just doesn't love her enough. Do you know, it was just a real... I thought it was a great movie. Friends with Money. If anyone else thinks it's good,
I'm going to add that to the show notes.
Yeah, send me a message and tell me if you liked it as well, because I thought it was a winner. But yes, so I've started listening to Homecoming, and I think I might have to talk about it more next week, because you've already done it, haven't you?
And, I have.
I'm only one episode in. So that's me for podcasts. When it comes to television, another one that I've only just started, and I watched the pilot last night, but I know I'm going to be incredibly addicted to it because I watched the pilot and was swept up in it straight away, was The Americans. Have you watched that?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Do you like it?
I love it. Oh. I love it.
Oh, see, I'm really late to the party on that one.
Here's what I think. You should watch it without G.
Well, I am, because he's not here. So I thought, okay.
Because there's lots of things you watch and you're a good partner, a good spouse, and you watch them together and you're like, I can't watch it because he's away or I'm away. So now this is something just for you.
I will. I gather it's not, well, I guess my teen watches anything sort of really now. She's 16, right? So, but I'm not sure if she'd be into it. What are you watching on television?
Well, I watched this week The OA on Netflix. It was a little bit strange. It's an 8-part series. Like, it's season one. I don't know if it's going to have a season two. It's that kind of thing. It was strange, but I couldn't really look away. I read a view that they said they were trying to out-strange Stranger Things, which I haven't seen. Have you seen Stranger Things?
Yes, I have, and I loved Stranger Things. And Stranger Things was the one that my kids were on holidays for Eid, and they really wanted to watch it. And I said, look, I really don't think it's appropriate, because somebody had said it was too scary for little people. And they begged and begged and begged, and we had, you know, 7 days of Eid break. And so we came up with the most stupid parent rule of, okay, well, we'll start watching it in the daylight in the morning, and we'll watch one episode, and if nobody's really scared, then we'll watch the second episode, but we're not going to start it, you know, late at night. Anyway, it started off in the morning at 10 o'clock, all of us sitting down on the couch. This never happens, I can say, either. My husband's a real, he's one of those people that has to be doing things, right? You don't just sit and watch TV. But I think it was Eid break, and there was, everything was shut, and there was no choice. You had to. So we started off with Greg and I on the couch next to each other, kids sort of spread out all over the lounge. By the last episode, which we binged watch for the entire day, so I'm talking at 10 o'clock that night, if you would have walked into a house, you would have seen all of us on one couch together, shoulder to shoulder, holding hands, watching the last episode. I thought it was fantastic. It was really good Stranger Things, and big comeback for Winona Ryder. But anyway, I've hijacked. We're talking about The OA. Tell me about The OA.
So it's a story of a girl who went missing for 7 years, and when she disappeared, she was blind, and when she returned, she was not blind. And so she won't talk to her parents or the FBI initially about where she was, but she kind of gathers a group of local misfits and meets late at night in like a house that wasn't ever finished being built. And she tells her story, which is shown through a series of flashbacks. And it's a bit supernaturally, and it's a bit something else. And it was actually written, produced and created by the woman who's the main actress, whose name I don't know. And I don't really recognize. But I actually, it was one of those things I'm like, I'll just watch one more episode. Okay, I'll just watch one more. Oh, right. There's only three to go. I might as well watch another one. And it's a Netflix original. You know, it's one of the Netflix original things. But I quite enjoyed it, so I'm going to put it out there. I saw it on a random, someone said I need a new show, and someone had written about it, so I checked it out.
Yes.
So that's it.
Okay.
What about
social media? Look, I just wanted to give, these women have been around for a long time now, and I just think they deserve some credit, that I'm Mum So Hard women, the two American ladies that sit with a glass of wine or a glass of something in their hands. Look, I think these women deserve huge kudos, because they weren't a one-hit wonder. Do you know when they first came out and they made a video sort of about being a mum and, you know, drinking and whatever, it was very, very funny, but they just do it over and over and over again. Like, really, I find them, I don't know, do you find them funny?
I don't find them always funny. I found the one that you shared yesterday extremely funny and also clever, because it's a real issue, like it's a real thing. Very clever the way they did it,
and very clever because it's something that gets talked about all the time, right? People have been writing about mum stuff for years and years and years. You know, from the moment the first mother blogged, there was an explosion of, you know, conversation about what it's like and the pressure of being a mum. But, yeah, I find these women hysterical. And when they were talking about the basic premise, and we'll put it up on the show notes, but the basic premise was about what the truth about coming home with a baby and postpartum and whatever. But I thought the phrase about waterboarding and keeping people awake, and how, you know, men crumble. Men confess to crimes. She said people confess to crimes when they've been, you know, made to stay up the amount of hours that we have. And she said they could put me in a room for 4.5 weeks and I wouldn't say anything. I thought she was very good. And when she said it shouldn't be called postpartum, it should be called PPWTF. But, yeah, I thought it was good that they both talked about their own deal with it and the whole trying to crack on and be tough, and that they were so glad. And I'm sure you can all hear the birds in the background at the moment.
Can
you hear
that?
I'm sorry. So it's about, to give people an idea, it's about 7:20 in the evening down at the beach, and it's cooled off. It was quite hot today, hot and muggy, and it's cooled off. And
oh, shut up.
Sorry. Okay, social media for you.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying, I was just saying stop showing off about the weather.
Well, I think people from Doha are allowed to show off about the weather every now and again.
Okay, when it's not 50 degrees, you can say, oh, it was a quite a hot, warm 36, but it's like about 23 now. You know, just the evening breeze as I sit here with my glass of wine and the birds. And...
No, I don't have a glass of wine yet, but I will have one soon. So what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm actually reading an actual book, Kirsty Rice, an actual heart with hardcover and pages.
I am impressed. Why are you reading? Why are you reading a hardcover book?
Well, because I wanted to read it, so I bought it for my husband for Christmas.
What is it?
Here's halfway through it. I keep stealing it. It's called Hillbilly Elegy.
Oh, I've heard about this. I've heard about this.
Yes. A memoir of a family and culture in crisis. And it's been touted as the book that everyone needs to read to understand what happened in the recent US election. Yes. It's not actually political, apparently, but it tells a story of JD, who grew up in the Rust Belt. He enlisted in the Marines after school and then went on to Ohio State University and Yale Law School, which are two very respected, obviously, institutions in the US. So, and it was a first for their family. I've just started it, but I really want to read that.
I've heard a lot of people talk about it. And, yeah, it sounds fantastic. Okay, Hillbilly Elegy. Okay, so, Nikki, I've noticed you've also put in our little show notes here a call to action. What is your call to action?
I got excited about buzzwords this week and I put a call to action at the bottom of our show notes. And I just want to say, you know, if you've enjoyed this episode and believe it's offered you any great tips on how to move with teens, and maybe you've got an idea for another great episode you'd like to hear about. We also have an email account. And I know last week we went through a lot of our social media, but we also have an email account, and that email account is twofatexpats@gmail.com. And you can send us an email anytime you'd like.
So your call to action is what? Send us an email or subscribe to us on iTunes or write us a review or just do something. Or share us. I think sharing is good too. Definitely be sharing the podcast on the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page, and you'll be sharing it on the 2 Fat Expats page. So maybe if you do happen to see it up there, maybe you might like to share it with your friends.
Okay, and next week we found the author.
I'm interviewing her on Sunday. So we'll be talking about The Disobedient Wife, which always sounds so naughty, raw. But, yes. We'll be talking to The Disobedient Wife. And I said Tajikistan to a friend the other day who's very intelligent, and he told me it's Tajikistan. What is it, Nikki? Did you know it?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
I thought it was Tajik because you don't say the J in other stans, but then I got all confused because I was trying to remember Kazakhstan and if there was a J in there, and Azerbaijan. Oh, see, there you go. Azerbaijan. Tajikistan. Oh, Tajikistan. Yeah. I don't know.
I live in a country that's called Germany in English and they call themselves Deutschland. So I really think that however we're pronouncing it, it's not going to be the same as the people that live there.
Fickle. All right, I'll say goodbye now, and we will catch up next week.
Okay.